16 minutes past the hour. You're back on the Mike Allen Show on you-supported Real Life Radio. Happy birthday, Ringo Starr, 75 years old today. It's the Beatles song, The End. Recommended by my guest today, she is Chelsea Zimmerman, who holds forth at the blog reflectionsofaparalytic.com. Chelsea, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, this is Providence, of course. I did not know you were a huge Beatles and Ringo fan, and then we just happened to pick this day for you to be on the show, that it's his 75th birthday, and you love the topic of drummers.
Well, I like Ringo, I like the Beatles, and it was quite a coincidence.
Ringo probably, would you say, in overall the least appreciated of the Beatles?
Probably, I would say the most overlooked, maybe. But he did make some major contributions. So,
well, you know, he people can laugh at him while he runs all the way to the bank. So,
well, yeah, that is true.
No doubt. Well, thanks for getting up early, an hour early down there in Pensacola, and being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know that.
Well, absolutely. Always great to have you on. And let's just jump right into it here. And again, I want to encourage people to check out Chelsea's blog, Reflections of a Paralytic. She's also the editor-in-chief with Catholic Lane. You still doing that, Chelsea?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. So very active out there in the blogosphere. Bristol Palin, of course, like any member of the Palin family, a pop culture punching bag for a lot of people. And, you know, I mean, there's a degree where some things you bring on yourself. She's been an outspoken advocate for abstinence, and now she's expecting her second child out of wedlock, formerly engaged to the war hero Dakota Meyer until just recently. But Bristol Palin now reacting to the criticism against her is saying, no, this pregnancy was totally planned.
Right.
Right.
The news reminded me of something I kind of thought about on my blog a few years ago. And it's kind of art, because when the news of her pregnancy first came out, she was getting criticized from the left, obviously. And then there was a big push, you know, a pro-life rush to defend her and, you know, applaud her for choosing life. And of course, you know, we're happy that, you know, she is choosing life for her baby, that she is giving birth to her baby. But then we find out that this out-of-wedlock birth was planned. And it just reminds me of, you know, just... it's like, you know, I call it, it's a delicate balancing act that we have or should have between, you know, supporting mothers who choose life in less than ideal circumstances supporting that and encouraging it, you know. So you want to support them, but you don't want to encourage harmful or sinful behavior like premarital sex. And it's just, that's what her situation reminded me of. And then they all, you know, of course, pro-lifers were all jumping on board to support her and encourage her. But at the same time, this is not an ideal situation.
Well, you can think about how it impacts on a whole host of things, too, because, you know, we, you know, I know, like, at our local Catholic high school, mm-hmm. in maybe religion class, to get into a topic about in vitro fertilization and mm-hmm. the church's teaching about it, and lo and behold, you discover that one of the students in your class is a prophet of in vitro fertilization, you know, so they're like, oh, so are you saying that I'm somehow effective or that I'm... Mm-hmm. just a product of sin and less valuable. Right. And so, this balancing act of affirming the sanctity of every human life while at the same time maintaining certain moral views is a delicate one, no doubt.
It is. And it's something I actually have talked to my very pro-choice grandmother about, because she's, you know, she kind of feels the same way, where she grew up at a time when, you know, when especially as a teenager, but anyone who got pregnant out of wedlock, you know, it was shameful. You were shaming your family, and you were forced to either go into hiding until you gave birth, and then you were forced to give up your baby for adoption or whatever. And so she's, you know, even she's glad we're not there still. But at the same time, we're at a place where roughly 40% of children in America are born to unwed mothers now. And, you know, the single motherhood is like a badge of honor. And, you know, not to belittle at all what single mothers do, at the same time, it's almost like we've encouraged this sort of situation that we're in right now.
Yeah, and it's a tough one. I've got four daughters aged 17 and older. So, you know, I've already gone through the thing, you know, and I mean, my girls are all great girls, but, you know, we live in a culture that when we're all drinking from the same sort of tainted well, you know, so it's very easy to get swept away in cultural trends. And, you know, I mean, it's the love is a very, you know, powerful thing, and attraction and all that. So I go through it in my mind rehearsing, you know, if I get that talk from one of my daughters, you know, and how am I going to respond? Because again, unless it's a very personal thing too, do you want to certainly affirm and celebrate this gift of life, yet at the same time, oh, you know, it doesn't feel the same as putting a birth announcement out, you know, if your child's been married a couple of years, you know what I mean?
Well, we actually had that situation in my family. My nephews were actually both conceived out of wedlock, but one was born before they were married. The other was still in the womb when they were walking down the aisle. So, you know, I've actually personally had to deal with this in my own family. And obviously, you know, we were excited for the babies to come. At the same time, I know that neither my sister nor her now husband thought their situation was ideal, which is good. They knew it was not the best way to do this, so it was good. So we didn't really kind of have, you know, that sort of conflict. But I think I know that it does happen in other situations, and it's definitely hard. I don't know, you know, exactly the answer. It is obviously a personal thing when you're having, you know, you have to come at it on a case-by-case basis, you know, depending on who you're dealing with. I just wonder, sure, culturally, you know, like I said, where we're at right now with 40% children born to unwed mothers, it's almost like we have gone to that extreme already of celebrating it and making it, you know, an ideal situation.
I think for women under age 30, I think the majority of babies born now are born out of wedlock. We're talking with Chelsea Zimmerman, who blogs at reflectionsofaparalytic.com. She's a regular monthly guest here on the program. If you've got a question or a comment, maybe how you have dealt with this, or you've seen others deal with this fine line that pro-life people walk, even in our own families, affirming the sanctity of every human life, no matter how it was conceived, and yet at the same time affirming particular moral principles. Love to hear from you. 855-949-1380, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Chelsea, I guess in a way it relates to this second thing we want to talk about a little bit too, and that is we really have gotten away from thinking about what's best for the child a lot of times. It, you know, like with Bristol Palin, if she had really thought more thoroughly through it, if this was indeed a planned pregnancy, wait until you're married, till that, you know, until you know that's a fact. Don't make the child grow up without an active father, perhaps. And who knows whether he, Kotemeyer, will be. But kind of connecting that with the Supreme Court decision, there's a great article here from the Culture for Bioethics and Culture Network about the unintended sort of reproductive bioethical consequences of the Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, it basically came from an op-ed somebody wrote in the LA Times, but you know, with the right to marriage secured, some suggest that the right to children is the next step for same-sex couples. And so, in other words, marriage equality leads to family equality, and we're going to get more and more third-party reproduction. That's just, you know, obviously, straight couples take advantage of third-party reproduction just as much. But here we have, you know, we've accepted and, you know, kind of normalized naturally infertile marriages. And, you know, they're going to want to have children somehow, and this is the only way for them to have children. And so this is going to be the next step, which is this family equality and sort of and just more and more third-party reproduction. And yeah, that has a big impact on children, not just the idea of them being raised without a father or without a mother, but just the fact that, as it does with straight couples, this sort of technology, this sort of way of having children deliberately denies these children of their biological heritage. And you've got same-sex couples wanting to have, even though they may not be biologically related to the child they're having, they're pushing to have the same-sex couples' names on the birth certificate versus the biological parents. And just children growing up not knowing where they came from, who their biological parents are, and it's just going to keep getting worse.
We're here with Chelsea Zimmerman. If you've got a thought or a comment on these topics, 855-949-1380. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Or if you want to share who your favorite drummer is here on Ringo Starr's 75th birthday. Chelsea, we're going to have to go to break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this issue, the bioethical implications of the Supreme Court decision. And then also get into this, I don't know, just weird thing called the transability. All mm-hmm. right, so hold on tight. We'll be back. This is your Catholic station. You supported Real Life Radio. You're listening to The Mike Allen Show.